They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It's 9:18, Wednesday, May 25th. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News, and episode 3 of my show Better Things with Joe Bianca is out right now. Go check it out.
Good morning. I'm Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. This weekend, it wasn't just the Preakness. Fawner Park wrapped up its 2022 meet, and it was a rousing meet, successful by all parameters. Next year, a casino is going to be there. So will people want to run at Oakland or Fawner? Going to be a tough call, but stay tuned for Fawner. Bigger and better things coming from our favorite little track.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. Sorry, guys. I just wanted to see what it was like to have unnatural and unnecessary delays between important events.
Ooh. Oh, good one. Bill, we gotta plan that trip to Fawner Park for the show.
There you go. John can't come.
Yay! I mean, oh, darn.
Great. Now we're getting more hate mail from the Fawner.
Add it to the pile. It's all right.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland, home of the world's yearling sale. Make plans to attend the Keeneland September yearling sale beginning Monday, September 12th. You can learn more at theworldsyearlingsale.com. All right, so after much discussion, the Preakness Stakes was held within 2 weeks of the Derby this Saturday, despite all of the consternation about running those horses back so darn quickly. Early voting won and looked pretty damn good. Got a 105 buyer, which is the highest speed figure by any three-year-old so far this year. But the second, third, and fourth finishers, as I pointed out on Twitter, all ran 2 weeks ago. So I think it's all good still to run horses back pretty quickly. I guess that's quickly these days. But anyway, it was a great ride by Jose Ortiz. We talked to Chad Brown yesterday. We're going to talk to him later in the show about, you know, what a big win that was for him and Klarovich and you know, all the connections. I thought it was a great ride by Jose Ortiz. I thought once he was able to switch off and track Armagnac and let Armagnac go, that race was pretty much over. And I thought Epicenter ran the best race of anybody, being squeezed back and having to close into that slow pace. Secret Oath kind of flattened out after that big wide move. It didn't work as well as it did in the Kentucky Oaks, which makes me think maybe we're overestimating these three-year-old fillies a little bit. Those are my initial takeaways. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, Joe, you nailed most of the salient points in this. The race was decided to me early on in the running when the key moment was when Epicenter had to steady. Just, I mean, not a ton, but just in the early going in the first furlong, he got squeezed back a little bit. And he wound up eighth in the field of nine at that point. And here's a horse with tactical speed. I thought he'd probably be third behind early voting and Armagnac in the early going. Now, when the fractions came up, 24-1, 47-2, you knew he was in trouble. He ran again. He's an unlucky horse. He, in some respects, he might have won both legs of the Triple Crown if wins the Derby, if Rich Strike doesn't run the crazy good race that nobody expected. And I think probably would have won the Preakness if he got a better trip. But take nothing away from early voting. And right, a very good ride by Jose Ortiz. You know, the pace worked out perfectly for him. He was second tracking a horse, Armagnac, who was, logically was not going to win the race, took over and won the race there. It's also, you got to give Chad Brown credit too. We don't like to see horses, we'll talk more about this, skip any legs of the Triple Crown. But he's got this thing figured out with winning the Preakness now, coming out of the Wood Memorial. And I think he realized what he did was early voting was not going to win the Kentucky Derby. And especially with the way the race developed on the racetrack. Chad realized that and he went for kind of the B target there. But nonetheless, this horse now is a classic winner, a grade one winner, a winner of a Triple Crown race, extremely well bred himself, in this day and age where it's all about making a stallion. He's made a stallion out of this horse and a presumably a very valuable one, no matter what he does after that. So, I think you're right about the filly. She's really, really good. But, it takes a Rachel Alexandra to pull this off. And she's not Rachel Alexandra, which is no knock on her. She's a tremendous filly. I've got a lot to say about, horses all passing the Belmont. Maybe we'll save that for later. But the other thing, too, and Did you guys notice this is the most strangely bet race in the history of horse racing? Happy Jack was 11-1. Fenwick, 50-1 in the morning line, went off at 13-1. Those horses ran last and next to last. Fenwick was beaten 40 1/2 lengths. I scratch him up. Who the hell was betting on these horses? And we're not talking about the six race at Finger Lakes where you bet 200 to win on a horse, you affect the odds. It has to be hundreds of thousands of dollars betting it. You know, it's just kind of a side story from the Preakness, but, you know, it was fascinating to me to watch how they bet this race. Maybe it's after Rich Strike, you know, the kind of the amateurs were looking, oh, I got to get another 50-1 shot. Bet on Fenwick because he's 50-1 on the morning line, not even realizing that's not going to be his odds. So that was kind of interesting. And, you know, it is what it is. Was it the best Preakness ever? No. But, you know, you make a great point, Joe, that, you know, none of these horses that ran back in 2 weeks melted down and disintegrated into the stretch. They'll move on and go from here. And we move on to the Belmont Stakes.
You know, Bill, you bring up an interesting point. I remember, you know, when Duke won the NCAA tournament last time Duke won the NCAA tournament, in basketball. And the admissions department announced that the amount of applications were up 40%. And amongst college admissions, they started calling that the Duke effect, you know, because everyone wants to associate themselves with a winner and they don't want to miss out next time. And I think the same thing happened with regard to the odds of the Preakness. You can honestly call that the Rich Strike effect, because nobody wanted to be on the outside looking in on another 80-1 shot. And Fenwick deserved to be 50-1, if not more, you know, in the odds. But the fact that there was a classic race and the longest shot on the board was 18-1. I don't remember the last time that happening, especially because that horse in particular, Fenwick, didn't even belong in the race. That being said, you know, you guys touched on all the major points as far as early voting, you know, ran a phenomenal race. Chad Brown really knows what he's doing now as far as getting horses peaked and ready, you know, for the Preakness and for some of these big races. So he's not just a turf trainer anymore. You can't just say that. Now he's actually got tremendous success, you know, at all levels and all distances and now all surfaces. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to having Chad on the show later on. 105 Buyer was really impressive. And I think we kind of glossed over that, and it really shouldn't be, because that was the, you know, Joe, as you mentioned, that was the best buyer number for a three-year-old this year. And that's saying something, because there's a lot of good three-year-old colts. The only thing I'll disagree with Jan Joe is that, you know, for Secret Oath, I know you said, hey, maybe the fillies aren't as good. And yeah, when a filly runs against the boys, like Bill said, you know, they have to be Winning Colors, Rachel Alexandra, you know, Serena Song S. They have to be just, you know, just freaks. You know, she would have been 6-5 in this year's Black Eyed Susan. And really, all the top fillies, I think we can all agree, all the top fillies ran in the Kentucky Oaks, and none of them came back for the, you know, for the Black Eyed Susan. So, yeah, I mean, I still consider Secret Oath and Nest and, you know, as two of the top fillies in that division. And again, no offense to Interstate Daydream, but I think she's got a lot to do before she gets to that upper echelon of three-year-old fillies.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting in the Acorn, because it sounds like Secret Oz is going to get some time off now and is going to point towards Saratoga. Nest might go to the Belmont, you know, as Mike Rapoli broke on our show a couple of weeks ago. But Echo Zulu is going to be like 2-5, I think, in the Acorn, because that mile hits her right between the eyes. Yeah, I mean, Secret Oath had no chance with that trip. I was expecting a little bit more run in the stretch than she gave. You know, she was kind of one pace through the lane and before ending up fourth. So it was a mildly disappointing her. And yes, it was a very strangely bet race. The Happy Jack thing I get, because if you name a horse like after a common name, they're going to be bad, especially in those casual fan scenarios. Like if Saratoga, if you name a horse like Mike or, you know, something like that, they're going to get bet no matter what. So that adds value. But I think the Fenwick thing, I think you guys are right that everybody was just looking for that next 80-1 shot, forgetting that it's a 9-horse field and you're not going to get an 80-1 shot in a 9-horse field pretty much no matter what, especially in a race like the Preakness. The other story is Gunrunner. And how quickly did Gunrunner get his first classic winner? If you look at his stats so far this year, he has 16 black type three-year-olds already this year, which is an unbelievable number, especially for a stallion with his first crop. And yeah, it didn't take him long to get that Classic winner. Obviously, his value is going to go up even more now. And, you know, early voting can start already to establish a legacy of a sire of sires in a year or two for Gunrunner. So, you know, it wasn't the most exciting race, but, I applaud the people who showed up after running in the Derby and running in the Oaks 2 weeks ago, because we're going to talk about that in a little bit. You know, the Belmont's not going to be anything special right now, but, you know, Teresa Gennaro made this point on Twitter that maybe it'll just be people who actually want to go to the track, actually like the racing, that'll be at Belmont. I know I'll be there. I know a bunch of other people in New York will be there. But yeah, there's gonna be no cachet, no big, like, exciting marquee names, but whatever. It's gonna be a great day of racing, and we're gonna enjoy it. Hopefully the weather cooperates. So yeah, I don't know how much more we're gonna talk about the Triple Crown after talking about the Derby for 4 months before it happened, now that the excitement's kind of fizzled out. But yeah, we'll talk a little bit more in broad macro terms about the Triple Crown a little bit.
Yeah. And Joe, just to jump in also about Gunrunner, because I had the same note. I mean, he had a Preakness winner, and Radio Days ran third in the Black Eyed Susan. A really sneaky good race, I think. I don't know how much we're going to get into the Black Eyed Susan, but, you know, Shug McGahey did a really nice job getting that filly to peak, that daughter of Gunrunner to peak in the Black Eyed Susan. And I think that she's going to be a filly that's going to be, you know, we're going to be hearing things from later on in the year as well.
None is the answer. None is the answer. How much we're going to talk about the Black Eyed Susan?
Thank you. I second that.
The other one, John said, none. None of the undercard stuff. We have a bigger race to talk about in just a minute.
What a tease.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you, as always, by Keeneland, Clarovich Stables early voting. We just talked about the Preakness winner was a $200,000 Keeneland September purchase. He led a sweep of Keeneland sales grads in the Preakness Stakes. 7 of the 9 Preakness contenders, including runner-up Epicenter and third-place finisher Creative Minister, are graduates of the Keeneland sales. Also, Grade 2 Black Eyed Susan Stakes winner Interstate Daydream was a $105,000 purchase at the 2020 Keeneland January sale. So Keeneland grads all over the map this weekend, winning big races, running great as they always do. And don't forget about that Keeneland September sale starting Monday, September 12th. Be right back to this message from Keeneland.
They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
Spitestown. Munning. Echo Town.
It's Echo Town for Joe Calamo and Echo Town raced away.
And Echo Town is drawing away in the stretch. Echo Town wins the Allen Jerkin Stakes.
A sire line so prolific, it repeats itself. Echo Town.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. Triple Crown winner Justify, you may have heard of him, had his first winner on Sunday at Santa Anita. Trained by Doug O'Neill, Tahoma broke his maiden on debut by 2 lengths. He looks a lot like Dad. You should go check out a picture. I tweeted out a picture of him and a picture of me when I went to visit Justify at Ashford. I think he's going to stamp those horses pretty obviously. So it's great to see a Triple Crown winner's first foals on the track. It was really exciting what happened with American Pharoah. It's just as exciting now with Justify. So looking forward to seeing the rest of his foals start to race through the rest of the spring and the summer. And on Saturday, Classic Empire got his 6th stakes winner from his first crowd, or Friday rather, with a Grade 2 winner, Black Eyed Susan winner, Interstate Daydream. So Classic Empire, I think, is on the rise as well. Currently sitting at 12% stakes performers to runners strike rate. If you look at those at his crop, he's up there. He's up there in the top 5 now with Cupid. And another young Ashford sire, Caravaggio, had a big weekend overseas. His son Maljum took the Group 2 German 2000 Guineas. And another son, Circuit 9, won in his 2nd straight start in Hong Kong. So Caravaggio, another awesome sire, another up-and-coming sire at Ashford. And can't wait to see more of his horses as well. He's stamping them too, those beautiful grays. So shout out to everybody at Coolmore. and Ashford. Things are really looking up, as always. And yesterday, we talked to champion trainer Chad Brown. So that was an exciting interview. Great to talk to him about a variety of issues. Chad, obviously, coming off the big win in the Preakness with early voting. It ended up working out for him. You know, it's interesting. He said, you know, if early voting, if a neck difference in the Wood Memorial, he might have been too pressured to run him in the Derby. Ended up passing on the Derby and running the Preakness. Definitely worked out. And he's got a stable full of loaded three-year-olds and turf fillies and mares. So check out our interview with Chad. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we are thrilled this week to bring on a man who needs no introduction, but I'm the host, so I'll introduce him anyway. Four-time Eclipse Award winner and now two-time Classic winner, Chad Brown. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you as always. So first of all, congratulations on the win on Saturday with early voting. You know, I think you clearly did the right thing with this horse. He didn't debut until December 18th. He'd only raced three times, but I'm sure it was tempting to run him in the Derby. So this is kind of a two-part question. A, how close did you come to running him in the Derby? And B, if he had won the Wood, would the calculus have been a little bit different?
Yeah, it's a good question. He was really 50-50 to run the Derby. I know we strung it along a little bit to see how the field was shaping up, and it seemed like we were dead set on the Preakness. But, you know, right up until his last workout, when I would have really had to ship him to give us the best chance to run well in the Derby, we were still, you know, probably 40% chance we'd go to the Derby. And then it just became more clear to us that the race really wasn't going to shape up the right way for him. We didn't think, no one could have anticipated quite that pace, but it certainly looked like there was going to be a strong pace. And although we have a lot of confidence rating the horse, like you saw in the Preakness, having no experience doing it yet, it's different to rate off one horse, right? Instead of, you know, not rate off potentially five or six and not even knowing what post you'll have. So that was the final decision. And yeah, if he had won the Wood, it's almost impossible to set the Derby out. So, you know, that would certainly changed things.
Chad, congratulations as well. You have a nice problem to have now, going forward, looking to the second half of the season, so to speak, of the Travers, Haskell, et cetera. You've got this horse, early voting. You've got Zandon, and you also have Jack Christopher. I know it's a long way away, but have you given any thought to kind of what the plan of attack is going to be with these three and perhaps how you might try to keep them separate?
Yeah. It is a nice situation to be in. You know, it's just if we keep these horses healthy moving forward, that's really the key. And these things don't really work each other out. You know, certainly we've been through this before with horses in different divisions that they have to run against each other at some point. There's only so many prestigious races, and if individual horses belong in them, I'm going to put them in against each other. So, but right now, thankfully, all of them either came out of their last races, indoor workouts, you know, good shape.
You know, I thought a big part of the win was Jose Ortiz. I thought it was a great ride. He was able to switch him off early. Part of that is a really good training job, but part of that is Jose being able to do that with horses. He was really emotional after the win. It was great to see. You know, he seems like he's a very authentic guy. Can you just talk a little bit about Jose's ride and kind of what he's meant to your success over the years?
Yeah, well, terrific ride. He's really has great chemistry with this horse. He's worked him a couple times for us, you know, a few times for us actually. And that's not really my ML. I do use jockeys in the morning occasionally, mostly in gate works and turf works. I've really, really tough exercise riders, really in all my divisions. I'm lucky. And we like to control the works a little bit more with the riders that know him, but I do use jockeys. This horse, we thought it'd be beneficial for him to work with him a little bit more, just to be rating the horse and such. And he really did a great job, not only in the afternoon, but in the mornings with the horse. And I think they gave him a lot of confidence to not be worried when another horse went out to the lead. And I think part of the emotion I would say, not speaking for Jose, is, you know, we talked about this race a couple of times, the Preakness, about, you know, with good magic, that was a horse that we thought could win the Preakness. And I think things just didn't work out the way Jose had hoped with the trip. And it was a tough race to ride. You remember, it was so foggy, really difficult trig conditions, and with the post draw, he was drawn just inside Justify. We thought Justify might be vulnerable in that race, having nurse, being nursed along with a quarter crack and such. Knowing Justify is a, you know, the outstanding horse and clearly the best horse of that crop. But we thought if there was one race to beat him there, and Jose really wanted to do over in that race, and so did I. And he just felt like he didn't use good judgment there in the first turn, going right to the rail, and got, you know, really bullied by Justify all the way around. And it really wasn't our plan. Can certainly see why it happened with the conditions. Hard race to ride. So he has mentioned it to me more than one time. You know, even that Preakness, you know, and I would tell him the same thing. You know, we talked about it before the race, how, you know, he was due here, and now is the chance to ride a similar horse that's going to be forwardly placed with some decisions to make in that first turn. And I remind Jose, you know, you wanted a do-over. This is it, because this horse can win. And don't, you know, ride smarter into that first turn. And you have these clear conditions that you wanted. And I think he was so, in my opinion, I think he was so relieved. I feel he was so proud of himself. You know, he took advantage of that second opportunity to win this race, and he got it right. And I was so proud of him as well. And lastly, he's been a very important part of our stable through the years. His career is still very young, and he's already had tremendous success with us riding, you know, some really outstanding horses, and coming through in the clutch in Breeders' Cup races and Triple Crown races, just delivering really good rides for us. And he deserves all the success.
Chad, now you've won your second Triple Crown race. You won the Bluegrass this year. Jack Christopher won a grade one on the dirt last year in the Champagne. Are you making more of a transition into the typical three-year-old classic dirt horses, and, you know, vis-a-vis maybe less turf oriented? Is that sort of, did any of this come about by design, or is this sort of the way things have fallen as, you know, things have gone along with the series?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It really, it's just the way things have fallen. Me and my team, we've always been, able, you always learn and get better at what you're doing. And with turf horses, we do the same thing. We've had a lot more success early on with the turf horses and their horses, but I'm still learning. I still pick up things and make adjustments as things change within, say, the breed or the track conditions or, you know, in any situations that I think I can make an adjustment, I will. And with the dirt horses as well. But I think it's just, you know, when you get the right group of horses, you get to show, you know, what you and your team can do. And, you know, just, it was 5 years ago already, the other Preakness. So it's, you go back there and mention Jack Christopher, but you know, that's the third Champagne horse. So there was ones before him. So I think if we have the right horses, and with our stable, thank God we have so many good horses sent to us, but in fairness, only a portion of them are dirt horses, because we are sent so many turf horses. We buy so many turf horses, and there's only so many horses you can train. So it's not like we go with one Derby and Oaks lineup and it's, you know, all or bust. You know, they're just a portion of what we do. And if we get the right batch of them, I'm proud my team got to show off that they know what to do to get them here.
You know, on Saturday, it was obviously a big day for Seth Klarman, being a hometown boy in Baltimore. But you like to bring your family out to the track, too. Were your daughters at the track? Did they have a good time? And how are they coming along as racing fans?
Thank you for asking. On this one, they couldn't. Everyone saw them there at the Derby, which it was so nice to get them there. And they had a great, great time. Although I think their biggest thrill was meeting Jack Harlow. His name is, so I wouldn't even know who he was. So just how old I'm getting. That was their biggest thrill. But no, they were into it. And, you know, it's so nice when they're able to come out and support. And they could. Ironically, my little one had a horse show on Saturday. So that took precedence. She's into jumpers and such. So, but yeah, it's hopefully the beginning of a nice summer together, and there'll be more wind picks. You'll see them.
Yeah. Do they want to follow in your footsteps? Like, do they want to train or ride? Like you said, the horse show thing, but.
Yeah, I hope, you know, my big one, Ava's 13, and doesn't show much interest in the hands-on part of it, but like to go to the track for the big races. My little girl Andy's 10, and I don't know, I'd like to see her go into the thoroughbreds at some point, but right now she's into the jumping, showing horses, just beginner level, but doing great. So I appreciate you asking. It's not a question I often get ever get asked, and it's very nice.
Well, no, it's great to see them at the track with you too. It really adds to the personality and the fun of the day. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. Hey, Chad, we've been running a series in the TDN about asking prominent people in the industry if they think the Triple Crown should be changed. And I was, to be honest, very surprised by your answer. You basically said, no, it shouldn't be changed. And the reason why I was surprised is because, perhaps no one else in training more so than you likes to space races out, ordinarily wouldn't even dream of running a horse three times in 5 weeks. So, talk about that, about the tradition of the Triple Crown and why you don't think it should be changed.
Yeah, it's a great question. Because you're so accurate, I prefer to space my horses out and give them rest. And I believe it's all trainer preference. And I think spacing horses out, a lot of people say, well, maybe the horses, the breed, and they're not as durable and need recovery time more. And we bred into it. Maybe so. Maybe it's part of it. I also think it's also a product of the entire program of a trainer. Some horses need spacing about, and that's the result maybe of all the other things you do with horses to bring them along to their races. So it just depends on the overall training program that they're in, of maybe how much rest or lack of rest is effective or not. My answer was really based on the history of the sport. When I got into horse racing right here in Saratoga Springs, where I'm speaking to you from, I was just drawn to the history, the rich, rich history of the sport and the prestige of the sport and such. And I'm really an old fashioned guy. I like to stick to the basics. I'm not really in favor of too much change at the top, I'd say, like with the real pillars of the sport, meaning Triple Crown races and, maybe older track settings and grandstands and stuff like that. I don't, changing the names of prestigious stake races and stuff. I don't support any of that. Changing any of that. Ironically, with my training, something that Frankel shared with me, he told me one day, he said, remember something. If I trained horses the same way now that I did in the 70s or the 80s or even the early 90s, I wouldn't be winning as much. So when you leave and you go on and I'm not around anymore, don't be afraid to change. Don't be so stuck to my system because that's all you know. Take it and always change a little bit. And I have, even though his system is really the base of what we do. And much like our team, Frankel could train any kind of horse. And I think much like me, maybe he got more credit later with his dirt horses. When he started to get the right type of dirt horses, he showed what he can do. And early on, he was probably known as a great turf trainer or trainer of fillies, right? Stuff like that. So not to get off base, but ironically, I'm in favor of changing things in my training system, but not for the main pillars of the sport and the things that matter to me the most. The things that most define the history of the sport, I would leave alone.
So Chad, you talked about, you have to look at the individual horse about why you brought Good Magic back. So let's take the case then of your two Triple Crown runners, Zandon and Early Voting. Why did you make the decisions that you did with them for Zandon to, and filled me in because I'm not even exactly sure where he's going next. And then, but he skipped the Preakness. And then with Early Voting, you've already said he's not running in the Belmont.
Yeah. Well, first of all, those two horses, I don't believe those horses will be effective about a mile and a half at Belmont. It's not just a distance, Belmont's track, and it's really my home track now. I love, Saratoga's my heart and soul and home track from a standpoint where I grew up, but really Belmont's the only track I train at where I have horses year round nonstop. And anyway, I know the track very well, and I just don't feel they're going to suit that track at that distance. as far as where they're going to run out next, the timing of the race, the Jim Dandy and Haskell, they both look good. They're the obvious preps for the Travers. The Travers is really the next race we'd really love to win outside of the Kentucky Derby. So I think either of those two races fit. Zandon, I really penciled in the Jim Dandy for the obvious reasons of his running style and such at Saratoga. It would just make sense maybe to stay away from Monmouth, a horse like that. Early voting has a lot of early speed, as does Jack Christopher, if we can get him out around a mile and eighth. So we'll have to see where those two horses end up, meaning Jack Christopher in early voting.
You know, one of my theories is that it's easier for a trainer of your caliber to wait and to be more selective with the spots you run in, because you have a lot of grade one, grade two type horses. I don't remember when you first started, were you running horses more often when you had like less horses and slightly cheaper stock?
That's a good question. I'd have to go back and look. I'd say yes with with the lower level horses, which that's all I had. When I started to get some better horses, even if it was just a handful, and they might not even been grade one horses. No, because remember from the school of Frankel, early on in my career is when I mostly stuck to what he was doing, even though I didn't have his horses immediately when I went out. It couldn't have been a bigger contrast to the horse I had to work with. But I did apply most of his system there. And then when I had better horses, ironically, more in line of the days of Frankel, we called Murderer's Row, Hollywood Park. I mean, they were all lined up down there. When I started to build my own Murderer's Row, you know, a few years back, I had horses more like him, but the system was starting to drift just a little bit of what he did, ironically, in that same horses, because things change, like he showed me. So I think for smaller stables, for stable starting and such, yeah, there's a lot of factors that you'd be more tempted to run the horses back sooner. You have less of them. You know, it's your source of revenue. And as long as the horses are sound, I could see that being a fair point to not have so much spacing.
Right.
Chad, I'm kind of the unofficial president of the Jack Christopher fan club here. Yes. And I'm not going to ask you to compare him to your other three-year-olds. That's not a fair question. You wouldn't want to answer for obvious reasons. But just give us your take on him and, you know, what you hope to accomplish for the rest of the year. And just in general, how good is he? And you know, what might we be seeing from a horse that obviously has a ton of talent?
Yeah, he's such an incredible talent, that horse. And he's one of those rare horses where the very first time we worked the horse, only like three furlong work, and he just blew me away. And now that I've had the good fortune of working with so many good horses, it takes a lot for that. It's enough one work, because horses will disappoint you sometimes. You know, they'll work good early and you get the owners all pumped up. And then by the time you get them to five furlong works in a race, like, wow, I wish I didn't get this owner so pumped up, because they're not as good as they thought. That horse, just off one work, was absolutely breathing different air than what I saw of any horse last summer breeding at Saratoga. So from that point till now, the horse has never disappointed us. He's just done everything we've ever asked him to do. And, you know, I'll tell you, that horse reminds me a lot of Gosapper. I said it after the race at Churchill. I mean it. It might sound like a unfair thing to say, and I'm not saying he'll accomplish maybe even half of what Gosapper did, but he's certainly on his way. You could understand why I'd say that with the brilliance. He's a different color horse, but he looks just like him. You don't be fooled that he's a sprinter. And fortunately, I had the opportunity to work with Gosapper and around Frankel. And if I hadn't had that experience, I would have looked at this horse and already sort of made my mind up, like, he's not going to go that far, but he's brilliant. But I didn't think that about Gosapper. I looked at the horse and I didn't think there was any way when Frankel put him around two turns that he was going to be successful, just from my inexperience. And it showed why I was the apprentice and pretty far down at that point. So, had that experience, and this horse reminds me of him. And I think he's a rare horse that he's going to be able to carry his speed and his sprinty pedigree farther than people think.
Yeah, Bill is the number one Jack Christopher fan. I'm the card-carrying member of the Gosapper fan club.
Yeah.
So when I heard that, I was like, I was suspicious about it, but I was like, if anybody would know, it's Chad. Chad worked hands-on with those horses. I'll take your word for it. Last question from me. You know, there's been a lot of talk in recent years about Belmont winterizing and trying to create a year-round product and eventually closing Aqueduct. That would probably include a synthetic track. You're a guy who ships everybody down basically south for the winter to Palm Meadows. If they were to have a third surface over the winter, would you be more likely at all to keep some horses in New York, or would you just rather stay with the current program and keep them on tour in Florida?
Good question. So So ironically, the two Preakness winners wintered in New York, which is crazy to think about. You're right. The majority of our stable goes down south. We liked those horses too. It's circumstance sometimes of why you leave them up there. It might seem like the bigger stables when we leave horses behind, particularly years ago, it would be lesser horses, New York breds or claiming horses on dirt. But nowadays, I find with our program at least, sometimes it's a late starting three-year-old that's a dirt horse that you don't want to move because they just ran in December. And there's an acclimation that has to take place when you go down to Florida out of the cool air to the humidity in December and stuff, and set you back sometimes. And, you know, most of the horses do go down. Our base of operations now is really Payson Park. It has been Palmettos for the first 13 years of my training career, 100% accurate. But the last 2 years, we started to shift up there on a 60-40 basis at Payson. And next year, we're going to plan on probably put them all up there. I just feel it's a better environment for our horses. Everyone has their own preferences of what works, and everyone has success out of all the places. But for us, I find Zandon, for example, you know, came out of Payson. So I feel like with this potential change in New York, if they do put a synthetic track, I would certainly consider leaving. Well, first of all, they're my partners. So when people provide good environment for me to train, and like I said, Belmont's my home track, and Naira has been very good to us over the years to grow our company from, you know, 20 horses to 250 horses. And they've been good business partners with just working together on any type of issue you can work on between stabling, racetrack surfaces and staffing and such, and stake schedules, whatever. I'm going to participate and help if they ask me, and if something's new, I'm going to do it. So if it's successful, yeah, I would leave more turf horses up there. You know, you're not going to see me leave Rushing Fall up there in the winter, but you're going to see these claiming horses and other horses that there's good races, and the purses are really good.
Yeah.
And and the expenses are less actually to stay in New York than to go down to Florida. So yes, we normally carry about 30 horses in the winter. And if they make these changes in the facility, like they're proposing and such, we might have as many as 50 horses there in the winter, which would be something different.
Gotcha. Well, the winter is far away from our mind right now. At Saratoga, how's it looking, Chad? You feeling good up there?
Yeah, it looks beautiful. They've, speaking of Naira again, they've really done a terrific job. So that Oklahoma track, it's the second year it's open, and it's really like broken and looks good. It's terrific. We raised a bunch of horses on it today, and it's already warming up here. And, you know, you're going to blink and Saratoga is going to be here. So it's trying to get ready.
Absolutely. Less than 2 months away. We can't wait to see you up there. Thanks so much for the time, Chad, and congratulations again on the win.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. Is this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Chad Brown, will receive a free 1-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back with this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
Honor Code, a multiple grade one winner from the final crop of the legendary AP Indy. Never off the board in 11 starts, he was crowned champion older horse before retiring. Now he is living up to the promise of his pedigree with progeny like grade one winners Honor AP, Max Player, and Maracuja, and multiple six-figure yearling sales. Honor Code stands to continue his sire's legacy at Lane's End.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Lane's End. The Lane's End Stallion of the Week this week is Honor Code, and we're going to find out why in just a second. The dual Grade 1 winner is the sire of Grade 1 winners Max Player, Maracuja, and Honor AP, as well as recent Grade 3 winner Cavalry Charge. He stands for $20,000. at Lane's End. And he had, honestly, the most important winner of the weekend. No disrespect to early voting. Stay on our good side, who our good friend and fan Skip Anderson named last year in our Name the Fall contest, sponsored by Lane's End. And now joining us for the first time, Chad Brownlee's your warm-up act, Skip. Don't want you to do it differently. Skip Anderson, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, Joe. John.
So great to have you. You had a champion trainer. Now we get a champion sheep breeder. This show covers all disciplines of breeding and training and everything. So Skip, take me through the race on Saturday. How excited were you, and how great was it to see him run so well?
Well, I can tell you there wasn't a man, woman, and child in my inner circle of friends that didn't know that Stay on Her Good Side was running on Saturday, because I told everybody about this.
Yeah, it was a hell of a run.
So as we were watching the race, I was dancing around, I was screaming, I was hollering. It was fantastic.
As Skip, it's really nice to talk to you. Tell us how you came up with the name.
Well, being in the livestock industry, naming livestock is so important. Putting that name and building that brand for that animal is crucial, because it's in the history books, it's in the stud book, it's in the pedigrees for the rest of that animal's life. And coming up with that idea, as you guys know, I think I probably submitted about 30 names, but there was lots of thought and lots of ideas into that one. And it was just a way to try to make the combination of with Honor Code and what maybe Nikki knew, and put that together and came up with a great name, I thought.
Yeah.
It was one of many great names, Skip. I almost wish that we could have cloned this horse just so we could have used some of your other names in there as well. Skip, now for the audience, just so they could live vicariously through you, the horse is going into the gate. He started off like 3-1. There was a first time starting more than ready that was like 9-5 in the beginning. And then right when we got into the gate, I think that's when we became the favorite again. What's going through your mind as the horse is entering the gate, and just kind of walk us through, because the race is only 51 seconds long, but I'm sure the angst beforehand was even longer.
It was wild. I was carrying all the nerves. When you have a name, when you name a horse, you think you're part owner. I was ready there to leg up the jockey. I wanted to be there. I wanted to see it all. I wanted to take it all in. And as we were going in, I was shaking. It was wild.
Yeah, maybe John can give you a little bit of a cut of that horse, or at least like we were talking about a 1 hour tax consultation.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, what was the best part of the race, aside from winning, was that as soon as the race was official, I got a direct message from Skip on Twitter that said, "Yeah, we're going to the Breeders' Cup." And that was so.
Hey, 51 and change. Not impossible. And we were talking about this in the group chat, the show group chat, right after 2023 road trip to the Queen's Plate.
I mean, yeah. So Skip, what do you think? Should John point for? I mean, this is going to be, and I'm sure he'll want it, since you are kind of like the informal advisor for this horse. I mean, let's just think the sky's the limit. Ontario bred. Should John be thinking Queen's Plate, or should he really go for the gusto and put this horse on the trail to the Kentucky Derby? What do you think?
Well, I think you have to at least put him on the trail to the Kentucky Derby, but I think we got to do what's best for the horse. I think we need to listen to his trainer, find out where the best options are and where we can get him promoted, and what we can do to make him a superstar.
You know, I hear Bill's antenna's going up. He's like, do what's best for the horse. I mean, he's not going to run for another 3 months.
Right, yeah.
Well, in this case, the horse has an excuse, because there really aren't any races for winners between now and kind of mid-July. So just for those of you at home and they're going to be following the horse, the two races that we're considering are the Sanford, the Grade 3 Sanford at Saratoga on July 16th, or keeping him in Woodbine on July 17th, the Victoria Stake, on his home track. I know one of the things that we do want to try to see either way is whether or not he can run on the dirt. So, you know, Skip and I haven't talked about strategy yet as far as where the horse is going to run yet, but I got a feeling that we're going to probably lean towards the dirt race just to see if we do have, you know, a Derby candidate or not. He was 3/5 of a second off the track record and won in a hand ride. And, you know, that was really, really kind of cool. But what was even more impressive is Mark Cassie doesn't have a history of really honing on these 2-year-olds first time out. like some other trainers do. So we're hoping he's got more in the tank, and that the 4.5 furlong win wasn't the top of his career. But the main thing is he lived up to his name, Skip, and I can't thank you enough for coming up with such a great name for this colt.
Well, I love the opportunity to be part of it, and as a big fan of the show, I was jumping on that chance right away to put some names in there.
Yeah, I mean, John, send him to Saratoga. That way we can go see him. You know, Skip is a great guy. Skip has offered to, like, buy me a drink from afar. And I told him, only if you come to Saratoga, then you can buy me a drink. So maybe we can work that out if he runs into Sanford. We'd love to see you there.
Right. And one more quick thing just for the audience at home. Skip, since you're so good at naming, tell everyone what your daughter's name is.
Our daughter's name is Wynn. Wynn Christine. We thought place and show wasn't appropriate, so we went with it.
I love it. But I also want Skip to give some of his background, because we know a little bit of it because we're friendly with him. But he's the sheep unit manager at North Dakota State University in Fargo, North Dakota. And also he's at NDSU. He's an instructor of livestock sales and marketing. Is this something your family has always been into? Can you tell us a little bit about your history?
Yeah, I've raised sheep my entire life with my family in Wisconsin. And then upon graduating college, I went and worked for a registered Angus ranch in southern Mississippi and had the opportunity to work with a breeding program there. And really, it's the pedigrees and the strategic matings and the stories of making better livestock is what really excites me. And thoroughbred industry gives me that as well, with a lot more pageantry and fanfare.
Yeah, was that the crossover? Was that got you into racing? Was it what got you into racing, or do you have a separate interest?
So I've always been a casual fan of horse racing, watching the Triple Crown races on TV. But it was a road trip I took and downloaded the audiobook about American Pharoah and listened to that and got hooked and thought, this is everything I love about livestock and being in animal agriculture. And it's exciting and it's fun and it's on TV and we can gamble on it. So why not really dive into thoroughbred racing?
Hell yeah. No, I mean, and we love having you watch the show. And we're going to throw up some pictures of Skip's champion, Hampshire U, and then a couple of other pictures of Skip and the farm. So we always appreciate the support. And it's so great. I couldn't have been happier for that horse winning, man, because you know, Skip really earned that contest. Like he was saying, he put in like 30 different names. We had to scan through the list. We were like, is that Skip? No. Is that Skip? No. Because we couldn't have five finalists that were all Skip's names. But I think he was going to win no matter what in the end.
Well, it was a blast. I enjoyed it and can't wait to have another one.
Yeah.
We may have to have Skip. If we do it again, we may have to have him as a judge instead of as a contestant
this time.
Just to be in on it.
Yes, sir. All right, Skip, thanks so much for stopping by, man. Congratulations on the win. We'll talk to you soon, bud.
Thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy.
Thanks, Skip.
Yo, so thanks so much to our boy Skip for stopping by. We're so happy that he not only won that contest, but the horse looks like a runner. So he's got that rooting interest, at least for this year and next year, until he becomes a stallion and John whisks him off to stud. But shout out to Skip for coming through. If you want to follow Skip on Twitter, it's Baba Acres, BAABAACRES. Definitely worth a follow. Skip's a great guy, and we appreciate all his support always on the show. And the CDN Writers Room is brought to you by the Kentucky Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders. Kentucky Breds have now captured 103 editions of the Preakness Stakes after early voting's win on Saturday. Bred by Three Chimneys Farm, the son of Gunrunner was purchased by Clarvish Stables at the 2020 Keeneland September sale. So far this year, Kentucky Breds have won the first two legs of the Triple Crown. Gotta think they're going to be odds on or thereabouts to win the Belmont. So obviously, Kentucky Breds successful all over the world, and those purses at Churchill, if you see them, maidens for over 100,000, allowances for around 110,000, 120,000, monster opportunities for owners and trainers to race there right now and collect those checks and offset some of those costs that John Green's always complaining about. So we'll be right back after this message from the KTOB.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky Breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
The TDN Writers Room was brought to you by XBTV. This week's XBTV Workout of the Week features Hot Rod Charlie working 4 furlongs on Saturday at Santa Anita in 49-3. It was his second work back since a runner-up effort in the Dubai World Cup. Doug O'Neill said he's pointing the horse to the Grade 2 Stephen Foster Stakes on July 2nd. We loved watching Hot Rod Charlie last year. I thought he was kind of an under-the-radar three-year-old a little bit, and it's like such a strong crop. But, he's primed for a big four-year-old season as well. And one thing I like about Doug O'Neill, he's going to race his horses. We're going to talk about this in a little bit. But Doug O'Neill will actually run his horses. So check out Hot Rod Charlie. Check out all the contenders for the upcoming Saratoga, Del Mar meet, Stephen Foster, like I mentioned, on xbtv.com. Just type the horse's name in that little search bar. Most likely find him. Okay, so we've got to follow up a little bit, I feel like, on last week's discussion about the Triple Crown spacing and whether or not the races should be changed. I posted a tweet on Saturday that I thought was kind of benign and people would agree with, that the second, third, and fourth finishers all on the Preakness ran back in 2 weeks and their legs didn't fall off. I was surprised at how many people got mad at me about that tweet and were yelling at me that, like, well, you don't know that the horses are fine. And, what kind of race are we going to get for the Belmont? Apparently, there's a lot of fans of 5 and 6 horse fields across the country out there, because that's what this leads to. If you're going to cheer and, champion trainers never running their horses unless it's on perfect, absolute optimal rest, that's what that leads to. So like I said last week, I don't think you can complain about the short fields and the stakes races all across America and then also be in favor of changing the Triple Crown, because 4 weeks isn't going to be enough. You put them 4 weeks apart, that's not going to be enough. You put them 6 weeks apart, that's eventually not going to be enough for trainers. So unless you want to run the Triple Crown races, one in March, one in July or August, and then one in November, it's never going to be enough for the modern trainer. And I can't understand how people support that. And I'm not saying, like I said last week, we just talked to Chad Brown. I defer to him. He's obviously an outstanding trainer, a champion trainer. He needs to do what he thinks is quote unquote right for the horse. But you don't, as a fan, you don't have to cheer that and support that. And I don't understand the fan of racing who wants to see horses apparently run less frequently and have shorter fields. Bill?
Yeah, Joe, I mean, very, very well said. And I'm surprised that you got that kind of reaction to that kind of tweet. And just, I want to get back to the Preakness, but I thought there was a side note, and you talk about the dearth of stakes horses out there. On Saturday at Belmont Park, there was no stakes race. Now, I don't know this for a fact, but the modern Belmont Open, I think in like 1966 or 1967, 68 or something like that, I think it's a good chance it's the first time in the history of Belmont Park there was not a stakes race on a Saturday. And the race that was carded was called the Seek Again Stakes. It didn't fill for Saturday, so they brought it back for Sunday with a 3-horse field. How about that? Isn't that exciting? Now, that's apples and oranges when it comes to the Triple Crown. But, anyone who tells you there's not a problem, that's not correct. There is a problem here. I mean, we didn't have the Derby winner coming back in the Preakness. We don't have the Preakness winner coming back in the Belmont. The Belmont is not half the race it could be if people actually ran these things, like they did back in the 60s and 70s and that sort of thing. But, there are no easy fixes, and especially the idea, and I'm glad we're all on board with this, of extending the dates. And like you said, Joe, and I'll bring this up again, I think that the most popular theory is make it 4 weeks, 4 weeks, et cetera. That would do almost no good, because that is not nearly enough time for the modern trainer. There's one other thing, though, that I would like to bring up that hasn't been discussed in this whole situation. Let's look at the purses of the 3 Triple Crown races. And the Derby's $3 million. Honestly, they can make the Derby $3 and give you a blue ribbon if you win, and everybody would want to run because it's the Kentucky Derby. But the Preakness is $1.5 million, and the Belmont is $1.5 million. In this day and age, that's nothing. Matter of fact, you could have a 3-year-old that ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile for $2 million, and then you're asking him to come back in the Preakness and Belmont for $1.5 million. I mean, we have the Breeders' Cup Classic at $6 million, the Breeders' Cup Turf at $4 million, not to mention the purses in the two races in the Middle East. Now, I would suspect that Pimlico would probably have a hard time increasing the purse. There's not a ton of revenue there. They don't, and they do have an affiliation. They get some money from gaming. But shouldn't the Belmont Stakes be worth $5 million? I mean, Naira has all the money in the world when it comes to purses. You know, would that solve all the problem? No. But, you know, again, we talk about early voting, and we didn't ask Chad that question. It's all hypothetical. But if the Belmont were $5 million, might he be running? I think maybe so. So, I mean, there's something else that needs to be looked at. You know, I can't believe I'm saying that $1.5 million is not a lot of money. But in what we're talking about with purses out there, it's, you know, a seven-figure purse does not get you the least bit. How many million-dollar horse races are there in the United States? There's got to be about 25 or 30, if not more than that. And so, you know, your premier three-year-old races should not be run for the same money or less money than, you know, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
And I think one of the bigger overarching issues that we're kind of touching on is the fact that because every year for the past, whatever, 20 years, I think it is, the fall crop has decreased, but the number of stake races have increased. So what's going to happen is you're going to get all these racetracks have these stake races as their premier races for the week or the weekend or even for the meet. And they're all trying to recruit from the same, you know, diminishing pool of horses every year. And whether it's that there's less foals born every year, or as we've mentioned before, you know, the top horses that are immediately being swept off the racetrack and into the breeding shed once they hit a certain, you know, milestone, whether it's a grade one win or a certain amount of money. And it's just, you know, leaving these racetracks scrambling to try to get these stake races going on. And Bill, you brought up a very good point about not having a stake race at Belmont on Saturday. How about the fact that, you know, if you looked at the card for, you know, at Pimlico on Black Eyed Susan and Preakness Week, it was a terrible card. I mean, especially in comparison to how good the Oaks Derby card was, or how good, you know, the Belmont card is going to be, or any weekend in Saratoga. And it just seems like that even though black type races are what fuels the pedigrees and the value for the breeding opportunities, you know, if we can't even get these stake races to go, then maybe we need to pair off some of them and just let them kind of, you know, die off on the vine, because maybe it doesn't have the same kind of value that it used to. And you know, again, we've talked about decreasing, you know, grading levels of certain races if they don't deserve it. And I know that's an uphill battle, and people don't want to do that. If they get a graded stake race, they want to keep it because there's so much value to the horses that finish first, second, or third, and their you know, their families within. But it's got to be something that we're going to have to look at pretty soon. Because if you can't get stake races to go at Belmont, then what are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, eventually that reality of the declining foal crops is going to come crashing through to the American Graded Stakes Committee. I mean, at least I hope so, because it just seems like, you know, it's just one of those things where we have so much racing and so much graded stakes racing. It's like we're in the same position that we were 20 years ago in terms of stakes and graded stakes when we have, what, 50% fewer horses hitting the ground every year. I don't understand this kind of obsession with keeping appearances and keeping all of these stakes races that nobody wants to run in anymore. When's the last time we got a big field graded stake in Santa Anita? Like, we've had 5 and 6 horse fields nonstop in their graded stakes. And I mean, that's kind of a specific problem to Santa Anita in that they're on an island and they have, you know, they've had some issues over the past couple of years in attracting the horse population. But in general, there's 5 and 6 horse fields all over these blockbuster cards. It's just unsustainable. And I don't understand how more people in racing don't realize that, don't understand that, you know, we have too many horses running for the races that we have already. Never mind the top races that we have way too many of. And to that point, you know, if you want to space out the Triple Crown more, let's do the math. You want to make it 4 weeks? Let's take this year. You want to make it 4 weeks between races. Derby was on May 7th. 4 weeks from then, June 4th. 4 weeks from then is July 2nd. That's 3 weeks before the Haskell. So are you going to tell me that a lot of horses, a lot of trainers are not going to skip the Belmont to run in the Haskell? The idea that this is going to help the Triple Crown series to space it further apart, so then that the Triple Crown races are now pressing up against the Haskell and even the Travers and the Jim Dandy. Like, this idea that we're gonna help the series by giving trainers even more options is just nonsensical to me, at least. And, you know, I talked to Nick Tamaro on this about this on Better Things, that he's, you know, he talks to people in the racing office. He's the race caller at Sam Houston. And in general, the people in the racing office will tell you, give horsemen fewer options and you'll get bigger fields. It stands to reason. And yet some of the people who are following the Triple Crown and you know, supposedly want to see it improve are like, let's give trainers even more options. Let's, you know, let's give them a chance to sit on their horses even more. Because then who knows what pops up, what race that might intrigue more, or what small issue a horse might have. 5 weeks. 5 weeks. Keep your horse together for 5 weeks, three races. If you can't do that, then too bad. You're not a Triple Crown horse. That's the way I feel. The TDN Riders Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining the West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. You can learn more at westpointtb.com. West Point had a great Preakness weekend on Friday. First Captain got his second graded stakes win in the Grade 3 Pimlico Special. That was a really good race from him. He kind of looked like he was up against it on the turn. There was a slow pace in front of him. He just kept grinding and just kept coming and was able to get up late and win that race. Terry Finley said the colt will be pointing for Saratoga this summer. And then on Saturday, Jackson Traveler took the Grade 3 Maryland Sprint Stakes and at Belmont Classic Colors won in his four-year-old debut for Christophe Clement. So a lot of action, as always, for the West Point partners over the weekend. We look forward to seeing them the rest of the spring and especially this summer at Saratoga. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills, fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse, every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving them down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The TDN Riders Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Legacy grads have earned now earned $3.15 million this year with 80 winners of 101 races in total. Last week at Horseshoe Indianapolis, I liked Indiana grad. Horseshoe Indianapolis is a little bit clunky, but last week at Horseshoe Indianapolis, Sweepin' Justice broke her maiden, and then me and Chili picked up more black type with a placing in the Sagamore Sired Stakes. So shout out to Tommy and Wendy. All the success of their grads they should feel very proud of. And that yearling sale season, less than 2 months away now. Facing July is coming up before you know it, so give Tommy or Wendy a shout for sure. This week's Remy cartoon, guy in the Belmont announcer's booth or the press box saying, we might need to rethink our Big Sandy nickname because we've got a bunch of people laying out and enjoying the beachy vibes on the Belmont main track. It really is deep. For anybody who's never been to Belmont, it is a deep, deep track. So I miss being at Belmont a little bit more often. I'll be there for the Belmont Stakes and Belmont Stakes weekend. So if you're going to be out there, Shoot your shot in the DM. We'll hang out and we'll get a drink. So looking forward to that. And it's going to be a great weekend of racing, obviously. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. Reminder that the Keeneland September sale starts Monday, September 12th. You can learn more at theworldsyearlingsale.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Chad Brown, Skip Anderson for stopping by, as well as our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you so much for watching. See you next week.